A proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful that you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. We are going to be talking about healthcare. And our guest is Jo Klein. She is a recovering attorney, by the way, who is a researcher, author, and speaker. And her specialty is in demographics and healthcare access. Her book is called Patient or Pawn, and we're going to dive into this right now. Jo, welcome back to the Business News Hour. It's been, golly, a couple of years.
Yeah, it was pre-COVID.
It was.
As we look back, yes.
You know, that whole COVID thing just turned everything on its ear.
It really did, and has kind of become the whipping post for everything, too.
Everything. Absolutely everything. But it was good for us. Because it was actually good for the News Hour, because what we were able to do then is start to utilize technology to reach out to people all over the world to have these business discussions. And so it wasn't necessarily always face-to-face like you and I are doing right now.
Oh, I think it pushed a lot of people over the technology edge, kicking and screaming. But that's okay. I agree with you. I think we saw a lot of advancements in communication. I think about the faith community and education and everything that allowed people to, the only way they could communicate, so they learned how to do it, whether they wanted to or not.
And it was, you know, there are some silver linings over something like that, and that was absolutely one of them. Jo, let's talk a little bit about healthcare in the United States. And don't get me started, because I recognize it for what it is. It is a travesty. And between insurance companies and all this mishigas that goes on, but I'm not the expert, you are. So where are we with healthcare in the United States?
Well, you know, in the past, we've had the issue, obviously, of insurance was a major issue. And right now in Iowa, we're looking at about 93% of insured on some form of insurance, whether that's private or government. Nationally, we're on about 90%. So that's really not an issue anymore. There's care available. Then we turn to cost and transparency, and those have become the new buzzwords in politics, certainly. I take the easy route, to be honest with you, Mike. I don't need to be an expert on insurance or cost or any of that, because I am strictly focused on healthcare access. And when I say that, I don't mean whether or not I can pay for it. I mean whether or not I can get an appointment. So my focus is on our ability to access providers and services when and how and where we need them as Americans. And clearly that is threatened.
Why?
Demographics, number one, just plain and simple. And of course, first of all, the baby boomers are going to get blamed. We absolutely have an aging population.
Yes.
There's no question. In the United States, we're going to be looking at about a 31% increase in the number of 65 plus population by the end of the decade. In Iowa, not that drastic, just because we're already more aged than most states. So we have a different starting point. But I will tell you, I believe that aging of Americans is really only half the story, because the other half of the demand on healthcare that doesn't get told is chronic illness. And we have almost half of adults in America have two or more chronic conditions. And when I say adults, Mike, I mean 18 plus. I don't mean 65 plus. So when you look at 86 cents of every healthcare dollar being spent on chronic conditions, when you think about the drain that that is, and 80% of chronic conditions being preventable, that's our biggest problem. Our younger generations are not well.
Preventable, yes. One of the issues, however, with that is that's not a quick fix.
Right.
This is going to take time for individuals to come to the realization that their unhealthy lifestyle is what's driving these chronic illnesses. And that can't be a turnkey operation that happens overnight. So how do we get there?
Okay. Well, let's look real quickly at prevention. And what we're learning right now is we have a really startling rate increase in cancers of those under 50. So we're looking at a 13% increase in the rate. Now, we would expect the number of people to go up because there's more millennials than boomers now. So naturally, our numbers are going to rise. This is in the rate of these occurrences of cancers. So 13% is a huge. I mean, it's a big pull on the system, but we're talking about human lives. The preventive part of that is that they are also coming in way too late and getting diagnosed. And part of that is, and I'm just actually in the process of writing a blog post on this, because it's ageism, strangely enough, in the young. Because when they're going in with symptoms, their doctors are not understanding the possibility of them having a serious cancer.
Because they're too young.
Exactly. So they're being attributed to other causes. They're not being treated soon enough. Then when they do get diagnosed, they're at third or fourth stage.
Wow.
So that's a prevention issue. But you're absolutely right to talk about changing lifestyles that would make an impact on healthcare demand would be decades. What I'm going to focus on and what my whole approach focuses on is chronic care management. So let's deal with the diseases people already have and make them better care managers.
We have been through this often in our lifetimes. With regard to healthcare access. Healthcare access in rural parts of the country is almost non-existent, and we're having to choose between driving hours to get healthcare or go to telemedicine, which is the big buzzword. Does all that work? I mean, does telemedicine work? Is that part of healing this issue of access to healthcare?
I think that technology and telemedicine, telehealth being one piece of that, is probably our only reasonable salvation for the worker shortages. We're not going to produce more workers. And right now, we have really a frightening number of, for instance, medical students. One-fourth of them are now saying they're seriously considering dropping out of medical school.
Right.
The doctors are not encouraging them to be doctors. So it's tough. It's a tough sell. So we do have that issue. When you look at the demographics and you look at the technology that could address a lot of that, rural care, you brought that up, rural health care. And I'll look directly at Iowa because we really have some drastic statistics. 70% of our rural hospitals are operating in the red. They're operating their patient services in the red. Well, that's scary, but half of them are privately owned. They're not government-owned facilities. So they have no obligation to continue to lose money and stay open. Eau Claire, Wisconsin, just heard that two of their hospitals and its 19 accompanying clinics are closing.
Hmm.
You're talking many thousands of patients. So telemedicine, does it work? Only if you do it. I mean, we're not tapping that nearly how we could be. Our rural hospitals could be spokes. They could be connected up, ICUs. They could, all the services, the triaging, the emergency departments, the things that are so impossible for them to staff because they can't pay the salaries. And what young person who can garner $300,000 a year in a metropolitan area is going to go to a rural town, a 26-year-old, go to a rural town and work for $150,000 because they promised to pay off some student loans?
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't gyrate. We're using really, really old models of incentives.
Now, you indicated 70% of hospitals are currently operating in the red. Why is that?
Our rural hospitals, because their population tends to be lower income and tends to be older, they are more likely to be depending, a much greater dependence on Medicare, Medicaid in our rural settings than we are in our metropolitan. But let me just say, our metropolitan, our urban hospitals are not doing well either fiscally. So we've had bankruptcies and closures across the country. I would expect that we will have many, many, many more reimbursement rates. And again, Mike, it's that aging population. So the moment you turn 65, what they get for you in a hospital visit is about half of what they were getting for you when you had private health insurance.
Correct. I have a friend who retired several years ago. He was a pulmonologist. And he told me privately that he could not wait to retire and get the hell out of healthcare because 40 to 50% of his time was spent on the telephone arguing with insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was not allowed to be a physician.
Yeah, absolutely, which is why you're seeing about a third of the country refusing to take Medicare, Medicaid, and about a third now moving towards that. So, and there is no, again, we can't force doctors, clinics, hospitals to take Medicare, Medicaid. So as our population ages, and they see, and sadly, we have a sick younger population, look at the, you know, crunch the numbers. If I can fill my waiting room with young sick people who have private insurance that will pay twice as much as Medicare pays me, I have to work half as much to make the same amount of revenue.
So, I mean, this seems to be an insurmountable issue. I know that, you know, we're based in the state of Iowa, and you have figures and information about that. Long-term health care in the state of Iowa, which is increasingly under pressure. Nursing homes are closing rapidly. They cannot get help for certified nursing assistants. Administrators are saying, I don't think I want to do this anymore. Having been a long-term health care administrator with 610 patients and 400 employees, I can relate to those issues about short staffing. I can also look at reimbursement levels in the state of Iowa, Medicare, Medicaid, and they are abysmal. And, you know, you just can't, you can't continue to deliver care and not get paid. And that's such a tragedy, and lives are on the line.
Yeah, no argument on any of that. On our supply side of providers, we have them aging out, just like the patients are aging up, so are the providers, and we have a terrible rate of burnout with our providers. In the United States, and the Census Bureau just released in November the updated projections based on the 2020 census. So we now are looking at the results of the most recent census. They have adjusted down our population growth, but more importantly, they've adjusted down our working age population projections. So in the United States, working age population, that's 18 to 64s, are only going to go up about 2% over this decade. Now, in Iowa, we would be glad to have 2% growth,
right?
Because we are going to have 2% shrinkage. So as our general population goes up about 3%, and that's slowed down as well, but still it's growth, and we have positive net migration in Iowa, so we're not losing people in Iowa. But our middle group, our 18 to 64, yes, that is shrinking by 2%. So that's not just healthcare, that's
everybody.
Industry.
So, you know, I'm a little stunned at indicating that we're not losing population when, in fact, we are losing population. The top two-tier counties in the state of Iowa are losing teachers and administrators to Minnesota because of better pay and better working conditions. On the eastern side, teachers and administrators are leaving to go work in Illinois. So they may not be leaving the state as such, but they are not working in the state any longer because of dismal pay and appreciation.
Well, that's true. Just to interrupt you real quickly, that's absolutely true. And I am looking at bodies, residents in the state. We have a positive net migration. But yes, of course, people are looking at, well, perfect example, Mike, is what you and I have talked about is the travelers, which are the people who work for temp agencies,
right.
We used to call them. Now we call them travelers, in healthcare, most especially. And they're going across the river where they can make sometimes three times
right.
what they're making in an Iowa facility.
Now, recently, and we don't want to get too hyper-local on this, but recently the wisdom of the Iowa legislature is to cap salaries of these travelers, of these individuals, with the thought that by capping salaries or those incomes, more people who are native to Iowa and not traveling will apply for those jobs.
It's an interesting perspective.
You're being too kind.
I'm being sarcastic. Come on. You know sarcasm when you hear it. Here's the perfect example spoken by a legislator. I'm a nurse making $30 an hour. Now, the reason I'm making $30 an hour is because I was 51st in the nation for nurses' salaries. So I'm making $30 an hour. You, however, Mike, have the ability because of your family situation, whatever, to be a traveler. So you've gone to work for an out-of-state, typically. There's some in-state now, but most most of them are out-of-state company, who then contracts with the hospital, but they're paying you $90 an hour.
Right.
The theory is, I have low morale because you're making 90. I would argue I have low morale because I'm making 30. So cutting you down to 30, and the cap is going to be on what your employer, your agency,
right,
can charge. It's a backdoor wage control, so we can't be accused of controlling wages.
Of course not,
no. We're just controlling what they can charge the institution. I will tell you what nurses have told me. Why don't they pay us all 50? You know, which makes sense to me.
But 70% of the hospitals are operating in the red.
70% of our rural hospitals.
Rural hospitals. You can't afford to do that.
Oh, no, they can't. They can't. They cannot. Yeah, they're shutting down their services. They're shutting down their hospitals, but they're shutting down services and wings and going to the bare bones in those rural areas, which it's not like those patients disappear. They just go to the nearest urban hospital.
Back on the census issue, one of the interesting things that the census proved out was that, yeah, we did increase in population, but it was through immigration where we increased. It wasn't necessarily people that were having more children, because many of our younger people are putting off A, marriage, B, having children, reducing the number of children. And so as I was talking to a good friend of mine who happens to be a staunch conservative, a Republican, he said, you know what we should be doing at the southern border is handing out green cards like candy, because in Iowa, for example, we have 84,000 open positions. 84,000
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yes.
Nobody to fill them.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it is complex and it is problematic. And it, you know, it does. Your book, Jo Klein, by the way, is our guest. Her book is Patient or Pawn? Epic Fails in Healthcare, the Approaching Perfect Storm and Strategies for Self-Preservation. Wow. That's a mouthful.
Well, it is a perplexing problem. And to address this immigration, yes, at the same time that we have a large immigration coming in, mostly through our southern border, which we estimate to be about, I mean, the Border Patrol says about 3 million a year, 3 to 3.5 million a year, we have capped the number of H-1B visas that can be issued to foreign-trained nurses. I mean, these are people already trained to be nurses. Obviously, there'd be some learning curve when they get here. But those are capped. We reached that cap last March of 23, which puts us through 24. So we're really not going to let any more of those people in, at the same time that we're letting in totally unskilled workers who can't meet the needs that we have.
Well, somewhat. Many of those 84,000 jobs that are going wanting in the state of Iowa
mm-hmm.
are low-skilled jobs, farm produce, individuals working in meatpacking facilities. You know, one of the calls out there is that those immigrants are coming to take your job. Well, that is horse hockey, because native-born folks are not going to go work in the meatpacking place. They're not going to pick strawberries in the valley in California. They're not going to pick lettuce. So, you know, that whole idea falls on deaf ears, and it's just simply not true. My guest is Jo Klein. She is the author. Now, one of the liner note on this, I think, is interesting on your book, self-preservation. What does that mean?
That means that we can't control the supply. We are not going to be able to increase the number of doctors and nurses. It's going to continue to shrink. If we could maintain that census, we would be doing really well. In
right.
Iowa, we're absolutely losing from our total. And we should be growing about 35 doctors a year just to keep up with growth. And we're losing, well, we lost 358 in a two-year period. From 21 to 22, our total shrank by 358 in Iowa. So self-preservation is the only thing we can control is demand. And that is societal, absolutely, and that would be your chronic disease care. But as an individual, the book really focuses on what an individual
can
do
mm-hmm.
to be first in line. It's not that there isn't going to be health care for anyone, it's that there isn't going to be health care for everyone. And quite frankly, you better have a chair when the music stops.
Right.
Because the waiting room of today, Mike, mm-hmm. 10 patients, 5 doctors, 5 nurses, I would say in 5 years that will be 15 patients, 3 doctors, 2 nurses.
Yeah. It is a stunning revelation on the healthcare system in not only Iowa, but nationwide.
Absolutely.
And this is not necessarily going to get better anytime soon. Final question for you, and I don't know if you want to go here or not, but I'm always interested. You make a real strong case of what's going on in the healthcare system here in the United States. What about other countries, other nations that are out there? I was recently at a meeting of some of our congressional leaders for the state of Iowa, and the issue of healthcare came up. They had recently been to Israel, for example, and they said, "Oh, the healthcare in Israel is awful, you know, and it's terrible, and they have to buy private insurance." And having been to Israel many times and having friends there, I know none of that is true. And I pushed back and I said, "Yeah, they do have insurance for dental and long-term healthcare that you can buy into. But the rest is government controlled and available." And when you raise the specter of our northern neighbor in Canada, people say, "Oh, you can't get in to see the doctor. It's just an awful situation. You have to wait." Yes, for elective surgery, but if it's an emergency, not so much. That's my understanding. Am I wrong?
I think probably this is devolving so quickly that a lot of the observations we've made in even the recent past are no longer valid. So taking a look, and if we want to go to the argument of government owned or not, I mean, 65% of patients today have government-based payment.
Right.
I mean, Medicare, Medicaid being obviously the biggest one, and then we've got the VA. So Medicare, Medicaid not working well, not working well for people. And you've got a lot of people being turned away. Again, providers have a choice of whether or not they take my payment as
a
Medicare.
But this only lasts so long, Joe, until people start dying left
and
right.
No. Our aging trajectory, our growth of our aging population is projected out for at least 75 years. And when I say at least, that's because the Census Bureau only rates it out till the year 2100. So, but because, Mike, think about it. When the youngest millennials turn 65, or mm-hmm. The youngest boomers, I'll get this right, the youngest boomers die off.
Right.
The youngest millennials turn 65. So this doesn't end with the passing of the boomers or even the millennials.
No.
75 years, it gets bigger every year. So yeah, the aging demographics and anyway, the illness, we're just not getting, our cancer rates are going up.
Yeah.
This is totally the opposite direction we should be going with the technology that we have. So back to the rest of the world. Well, I will tell you the demographics that we are suffering, they're suffering everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look in the European countries, they have no workers. And we are approaching that. And certainly in Iowa, it is going to be a threat to our economic development very quickly, which is our viability as a state.
It is a confounding, complex and troubling future for the United States, for patients, for individuals who are counting on a healthcare system that seems to be, well, broken.
And I have to say, when you teach someone to be an engaged patient
mm-hmm.
and actually be empowered and find the right provider, number one, have a provider, which half people don't even have. Only 1/4 of seniors bother to have their annual wellness visit. These are benefits that are available to you. If you don't get into the system today and have a PCP to be your advocate, when you need a specialist, you will not get an appointment.
Wow.
So those are simple steps that you can take as an individual
right now. Mm-hmm.
To preserve yourself. Yep.
Joe Klein has been our guest, ladies and gentlemen, talking about not only healthcare in Iowa, but also nationwide. Her book, once again, is called Patient or Pawn. We will have links to all of this up on the radio blog. Joe, thanks so very much for sitting down and having this frank and open discussion with me. I find this stuff incredibly interesting. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about healthcare access.
Joe Klein, what we thought was a fascinating conversation about healthcare and healthcare access, not only in Iowa, but across the country. And yes, we will have links to Joe Klein up on the radio blog. And that is a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us, for all of us that put this together each and every day. Champ Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Joe Klein, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.